Protocol 15, Ruthless Suppression. When we at last definitely come into our kingdom by the aid of coup d'etat prepared everywhere for one and the same day, after the worthlessness of all existing forms of government has been definitely acknowledged, and not a little time will pass before that comes about, perhaps even a whole century, we shall make it our task to see that against us such things as plots shall no longer exist. With this purpose we shall slay without mercy all who take arms in hand to oppose our coming into our kingdom. Every kind of new institution of anything like a secret society will also be punished with death. Those of them which are now in existence are known to us, serve us, and have served us. We shall disband and send into exile to continents far removed from Europe. In this way, we shall proceed with these goy masons who know too much. Such of these as we may for some reason spare will be kept in constant fear of exile. We shall promulgate a law making all former members of secret societies liable to exile from Europe as the center of our rule. Resolutions of our government will be final, without appeal. In the Goy societies, in which we have planted and deeply rooted discord and Protestantism, the only possible way of restoring order is to employ merciless measures that prove the direct force of authority. No regard must be paid to the victims who fall. They suffer for the well-being of the future. The attainment of that well-being, even at the expense of sacrifices, is the duty of any kind of government that acknowledges as justification for its existence not only its privileges but its obligations. The principal guarantee of stability of rule is to confirm the aureole of power, and this aureole is attained only by such majestic inflexibility of might as shall carry on its face the emblems of inviolability from mystical causes, from the choice of God. Such was, until recent times, the Russian autocracy, the one and only serious foe we had in the world, without counting the papacy. Bear in mind the example when Italy, drenched with blood, never touched a hair of the head of Sulla, who had poured forth that blood. Sulla enjoyed an apotheosis for his might in the eyes of the people, though they had been torn in pieces by him. But his intrepid return to Italy ringed him round with inviolability. The people do not lay a finger on him who hypnotizes them by his daring and strength of mind. Meantime, however, until we come into our kingdom, we shall act in a contrary way. We shall create and multiply Freemasonic lodges in all the countries of the world, absorb into them all who may become or who are prominent in public activity, for in these lodges we shall find our principal intelligence office and means of influence. All these lodges we shall bring under one central administration, known to us alone and to all others absolutely unknown, which will be composed of our learned elders. The lodges will have their representatives who will serve to screen the above-mentioned administration of Masonry, and from whom we will issue the watchword and program. In these lodges we shall tie together the knot which binds together all revolutionary and liberal elements. Their composition will be made up of all strata of society. The most secret political plots will be known to us and will fall under our guiding hands on the very day of their conception. Among the members of these lodges will be almost all the agents of international and national police, since their service is for us irreplaceable in the respect that the police is in a position not only to use its own particular measures with the insubordinate, but also to screen our activities and provide pretexts for discontents, etc. The class of people who most willingly enter into secret societies are those who live by their wits, careerists, and in general people, mostly light-minded, with whom we shall have no difficulty in dealing and in using to wind up the mechanism of the machine devised by us. If this world grows agitated, the meaning of that will be that we have had to stir it up in order to break up its too great solidarity. But if there should arise in its midst a plot, then at the head of the plot will be none other than one of our most trusted servants. It is natural that we and no other should lead Masonic activities, for we know whither we are leading. We know the final goal of every form of activity, whereas the Goyim have knowledge of nothing, not even of the immediate effect of action. They put before themselves, usually, the momentary reckoning of the satisfaction of their self-opinion in the accomplishment of their thought, without even remarking that the very conception never belonged to their initiative, but to our instigation of their thought. The Goyim enter the lodges out of curiosity or in the hope by their means to get a nibble at the public pie. And some of them, in order to obtain a hearing before the public for their impracticable and groundless fantasies, they thirst for the emotion of success and applause, of which we are remarkably generous. And the reason why we give them this success is to make use of the high conceit of themselves to which it gives birth. For that insensibly disposes them to assimilate our suggestions without being on their guard against them, in the fullness of their confidence that it is their own infallibility which is giving utterance to their own thoughts, and that it is impossible for them to borrow those of others. You cannot imagine to what extent the wisest of the Goyim can be brought to a state of unconscious naivete in the presence of this condition of high conceit of themselves, and at the same time how easy it is to take the heart out of them by the slightest ill success, though it be nothing more than the stoppage of the applause they had, and to reduce them to a slavish submission for the sake of winning a renewal of success. By so much as ours disregards success if only they can carry through their plans. By so much the Goyim are willing to sacrifice any plans only to have success. The psychology of theirs materially facilitates for us the task of setting them in the required direction. These tigers in appearance have the souls of sheep, and the wind blows freely through their heads. We have set them on the hobby horse of an idea about the absorption of individuality by the symbolic unit of collectivism. They have never yet, and they never will, have the sense to reflect that this hobby horse is a manifest violation of the most important law of nature, which has established from the very creation of the world one unit like another, and precisely for the purpose of instituting individuality. If we have been able to bring them to such a pitch of stupid blindness, is it not proof, and an amazingly clear proof, of the degree to which the mind of the Goyim is undeveloped in comparison with our mind? This it is, mainly, which guarantees our success. And how far-seeing were our learned elders in ancient times when they said that to attain a serious end, it behooves not to stop at any means or to count the victims sacrificed for the sake of that end. We have not counted the victims of the seed of the cattle goy, though we have sacrificed many of our own. But for that we have now already given them such a position on the earth as they could not even have dreamed of. The comparatively small numbers of the victims from the number of ours have preserved our nationality from destruction. Death is the inevitable end for all. It is better to bring that end nearer to those who hinder our affairs than to ourselves, to the founders of this affair. We execute Masons in such wise that none save the Brotherhood can ever have suspicion of it, not even the victims themselves of our death sentence. They all die when required as if from normal kind of illness. Knowing this, even the Brotherhood in its turn dare not protest. By such methods, we have plucked out of the midst of Masonry the very root of protest against our disposition. While preaching liberalism to the goyim, we at the same time keep our own people and our agents in a state of unquestioning submission. Under our influence, the execution of the laws of the goyim has been reduced to a minimum. The prestige of the law has been exploded by the liberal interpretations introduced into this sphere. In the most important and fundamental affairs and questions, judges decide as we dictate to them. See matters in the light wherewith we enfold them for the administration of the goyim. Of course, through persons who are our tools, though we do not appear to have anything in common with them. By newspaper opinion or by other means. Even senators and the higher administration accept our counsels. The purely brute mind of the goyim is incapable of use for analysis and observation, and still more for the foreseeing whither a certain manner of settling a question may tend. In this difference in capacity for thought between the goyim and ourselves may be clearly discerned the seal of our position on the chosen people and of our higher quality of humanness, in contradistinction to the brute mind of the goyim. Their eyes are open, but see nothing before them and do not invent, unless perhaps material things. From this it is plain that nature herself has destined us to guide and rule the world. When comes the time of our overt rule, the time to manifest its blessings, we shall remake all legislatures, all our laws will be brief, plain, stable, without any kind of interpretations, so that anyone will be in a position to know them perfectly. The main feature which will run right through them is submission to orders, and this principle will be carried to a grandiose height. Every abuse will then disappear in consequence of the responsibility of all down to the lowest unit before the higher authority of the representative of power. Abuses of power subordinate to this last instance will be so mercilessly punished that none will be found anxious to try experiments with their own powers. We shall follow up jealously every action of the administration on which depends the smooth running of the machinery of the state. For slackness in this produces slackness everywhere. Not a single case of illegality or abuse of power will be left without exemplary punishment. Concealment of guilt, connivance between those in the service of the administration, all this kind of evil will disappear after the very first examples of severe punishment. The aureole of our power demands suitable, that is, cruel, punishments for the slightest infringement. For the sake of gain of its supreme prestige. The sufferer, though his punishment may exceed his fault, will count as a soldier falling on the administrative field of battle. In the interest of authority, principle, and law, which do not permit that any of those who hold the reins of the public coach should turn aside from the public highway to their own private paths. For example, our judges will know that whenever they feel disposed to plume themselves on foolish clemency, they are violating the law of justice which is instituted for the exemplary edification of men by penalties for lapses and not for display of the spiritual qualities of the judge. Such qualities it is proper to show in private life, but not in a public square which is for the educationary basis of human life. Our legal staff will serve not beyond the age of 55, firstly because old men more obstinately hold to prejudiced opinions and are less capable of submitting to new directions, and secondly because this will give us the possibility by this measure of securing elasticity in the changing of staff, which will thus the more easily bend under our pressure. He who wishes to keep his place will have to give blind obedience to deserve it. In general, our judges will be elected by us only from among those who thoroughly understand that the part they have to play is to punish and apply laws, and not to dream about the manifestations of liberalism at the expense of the educationary scheme of the state, as the goyim in these days imagine it to be. This method of shuffling the staff will serve also to explode any collective solidarity of those in the same service, and will bind all to the interests of the government upon which their fate will depend. The young generation of judges will be trained in certain views regarding the inadmissibility of any abuses that might disturb the established order of our subjects among themselves. In these days, the judges of the Goyim create indulgences to every kind of crimes, not having a just understanding of their office. Because the rulers of the present age, in appointing judges to office, take no care to inculcate in them a sense of duty and consciousness of the matter which is demanded of them. As a brute beast lets out its young in search of prey, so do the Goyim give their subjects places to profit without thinking to make clear to them for what purpose such place was created. This is the reason why their governments are being ruined by their own forces through the acts of their own administration. Let us borrow from the example of the results of these actions yet another lesson for our government. We shall root out liberalism from all the important strategic posts of our government on which depends the training of subordinates for our state structure. Such posts will fall exclusively to those who have been trained by us for administrative rule. To the possible objection that the retirement of old servants will cost the treasury heavily, I reply, firstly, they will be provided with some private service in place of what they lose, and secondly, I have to remark that all the money in the world will be concentrated in our hands. Consequently, it is not our government that has to fear expense. Our absolutism will in all things be logically consecutive, and therefore in each one of its decrees, our supreme will be respected and unquestionably fulfilled. It will ignore all murmurs, all discontents of every kind, and will destroy to the root every kind of manifestation of them in act by punishment of an exemplary character. We shall abolish the right of cassation, which will be transferred exclusively to our disposal, to the cognizance of him who rules. For we must not allow the conception among the people of a thought that there could be such a thing as a decision that is not right of judges set up by us. If, however, anything like this should occur, we shall ourselves cassate the decision, but inflict therewith such exemplary punishment on the judge for lack of understanding of his duty and the purpose of his appointment as will prevent a repetition of such cases. I repeat that it must be borne in mind that we shall know every step of our administration, which only needs to be closely watched, for the people to be content with us, for it has the right to demand from a good government a good official. Our government will have the appearance of a patriarchal paternal guardianship on the part of our ruler. Our own nation and our subjects will discern in his person a father caring for their every need, their every act, their every interrelation as subjects with one another, as well as their relations to the ruler. They will then be so thoroughly imbued with the thought that it is impossible for them to dispense with this wardship and guidance, if they wish to live in peace and quiet, that they will acknowledge the autocracy of our ruler with a devotion bordering on apotheosis, especially when they are convinced that those whom we set up do not put their own place of this authority, but only blindly execute his dictates. They will be rejoiced that we have regulated everything in their lives, as is done by wise parents who desire to train their children in the cause of duty and submission. For the peoples of the world regard to the secrets of our polity are ever, through the ages, only children under age, precisely as are also their governments. As you see, I found our despotism on right and duty. The right to compel the execution of duty is the direct obligation of a government which is a father for its subjects. It has the right of the strong that it may use it for the benefit of directing humanity towards that order which is defined by nature, namely, submission. Everything in the world is in a state of submission, if not to man, then to circumstances or its own inner character, in all cases to what is stronger. And so shall we be this something stronger for the sake of good. We are obliged without hesitation to sacrifice individuals who commit a breach of established order, for on the exemplary punishment of evil lies a great educational problem. When the king of Israel sets upon his sacred head the crown offered him by Europe, he will become patriarch of the world. The indispensable victims offered by him in consequence of their suitability will never reach the number of victims offered in the course of centuries by the mania of magnificence, the emulation between the Goy governments. Our king will be in constant communion with the peoples, making to them from the tribune speeches, which fame will in that same hour distribute all over the world. End of Protocol 15.